The following presentation was recorded live by HAudio.com.
The four things every Jew should know. You're going to remember this because of the acronym JACP. If you remember the acronym JACP, you will always remember what I'm about to tell you, and you'll be able to share it with other people. That means J stands for something, A stands for something, K and P, JACP. J. J stands for judgment. A question is asked in the Talmud, a scenario is painted. It says, if A comes to B and says to B, if you don't kill C, I'm going to kill you. The question asked is B allowed to kill C in self-defense? Let me repeat. A says to B, comes to B and says, I'm going to kill you unless you kill C. Can B kill C in self-defense? The answer really is no. But let's paint it a different way. Imagine B is a tremendously righteous person, the greatest rabbi in the world, and C, a bum, a derelict, a drunk in the gutter. And A, some crazy person, comes up to this great rabbi and says, I'm going to kill you unless you kill that drunken bum. And he's the greatest rabbi of the generation. Can he kill the bum? Because if he doesn't kill him, he's going to be killed. Self-defense. The answer is no. Let's paint it a different way. Imagine that B is a cancer scientist. A cancer scientist. He's on his way to a press conference to announce the cure for cancer. He's going to save millions of people. And on his way, some crazy person comes up to him and says, if you don't kill, puts a gun to his head and says, if you don't kill that bum in the street, I'm going to kill you. Can the cancer scientist kill the bum in the street? First of all, it's self-defense. And also, he's going to, this guy who probably is just gasping his last breath anyway, compared to saving, I'm on my way to the press conference to save millions of people to announce the cure for cancer. Can he kill the bum? Can B kill C? And the answer is no. Why? The Talmud says, because you don't know whose blood is redder in the eyes of God. You don't know who has more self-worth, whose life has more worth in the eyes of God. On the surface, we think, oh, of course, the rabbi, the bum, right? The rabbi is more worth. On the surface, we see the cancer scientist, the bum, of course, the cancer scientist. The Talmud says, you don't know. We meet people in chapter 3. We didn't read the introduction. We never read chapter 1 and 2. We meet people at a certain point in their life in chapter 3. We don't know what's going to be in chapter 4 and 5. And yet we're so quick to judge a person in chapter 3. So quick. They had a whole life before you met them. They had parents. They had challenges. You don't know what challenges they might have had. That cancer scientist who you think, oh, what a righteous person. This is the most amazing person. Maybe they had the ability to discover the cure for cancer 20 years ago. But they were just, you know, riding on their, you know, the bursaries and the funding, and they were just like not in such a hurry. And maybe they didn't realize their potential. And it could be the bum in the street was born into a mafia family and really was supposed to be trained to be a hitman. And he chose to leave that life, to leave it all behind. He didn't want to be a killer. And in the end, he couldn't make a living, and this is where he ended up. But he made a choice. It was a moral choice. Sounds wild. Could it be? You don't know. You really don't know. J for judgment means you can't judge another person. Only God can judge. You can't judge another person. It says in Perkei Avot, in Ethics of Our Fathers, it says that you can't judge a person until you've come to their way. Until you really walked in their shoes. Until you've come to their way. You don't. And since a person can never live the exact same life as another person, you can never judge another person. Only God knows where you came from, where you're at, and where you're going. Only God knows how you handled the challenges along the way. When he gave you poverty as a challenge, when he gave you wealth as a challenge, when he gave you sickness as a challenge, how did you react to it? Only he knows. And he knows the circumstances. He also knows if you're really realizing your potential. Compared to most people, you are probably a very nice person. You are probably above average of niceness. Probably a little bit more giving than most people, a little bit deeper than most people, a little bit more thoughtful than most people. And what happens is we compare ourselves to other people. And you know what? God doesn't. He does not compare you to other people. He compares you to you. And sometimes we have to be honest. And we have to look in the mirror and we have to say, hey, am I really realizing my potential? Am I really making the most of who I am? Not just, I'm a little bit better than everybody around me. Judgment has a bad rap. I'm telling you, you can't judge another person. Listen, you can judge actions. If a person's making a mistake, you can say, this is a mistake. But you can't say that's a bad person because they're making that mistake. People make mistakes. Only God can judge. But as my husband always says, don't be so open-minded that your brains fall out. There are evil, bad people in the world. Chances are it's not your sister-in-law. Chances are it's somebody who is the head of some country that is trying to destroy the world or destroy the Jewish people. Those people you can judge. But 99.999% of the people you know, you can't. You say that person's making a mistake. But God can judge us, and he does. And you know what? We want his judgment. You think you don't. You think, like, I don't want God to judge me. Doesn't sound like a very nice thing. Judgment has a bad rap. It's got a bad name. But you know what? You want God's judgment. You want his judgment. The fact that God judges you means that your judgments count. That what you do matters. Before I was living in the neighborhood I'm in now, I was living in an area that was a little bit more mixed. And there were Jews and there were non-Jews. And I remember it was Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah is our day of judgment. That's what it is. It's day of judgment. It was Rosh Hashanah, our new year. And my non-Jewish neighbor came up to me and said, Happy New Year! Is that what I'm supposed to say? And I said, yeah, it is. And she goes, well, tell me about your new year. I said, well, we look back at our year and we resolve to be better people and we gather as families of celebration. And she goes, gosh, that sounds just like ours. And I said, well, yeah, I guess. I remember going into my house thinking, wait a minute. What's the difference? What's the difference between Rosh Hashanah and January 1st? What's the difference? So imagine January 1st, right? And you look back at your year and you resolve to be a better person. I'm going to take a course. I'm going to be more patient with my kids. I'm going to join a club, right? I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to quit smoking. I'm going to lose weight. The year goes by. It's January 1st again. You didn't take the course. You weren't so patient with your kids. You didn't quit smoking. You didn't lose the weight. So what do? You resolve to do them again and Happy New Year, right? Let's all drink up. Rosh Hashanah. You look back at your year. You see you've made mistakes. You resolve to be a better person. I'm going to be a bit more patient with my kids. I'm going to take a course. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to stop smoking. The year goes by. It's Rosh Hashanah again. You didn't do any of it. So what do? You have to go before God. And you have to account. Accountability. That's the difference between January 1st and Rosh Hashanah. Accountability. And accountability is good. Can you imagine a life without accountability? Can you imagine if nobody cared whether you showed up or you didn't show up? You made dinner, you didn't make dinner. You finished that project, you didn't finish the project. You signed on the dotted line, you didn't sign. It added up, it didn't add. Can you imagine a life? That sounds nice for about 3 days, huh? But after that, it would be pretty depressing. Accountability is good. It keeps us strong. It keeps us focused. It keeps us growing. Somebody cares, whether it's your boss or it's your husband or it's your neighbor. Somebody cares. Accountability means somebody cares. God cares. It's not enough just to say, Happy New Year, let's just try again. You have to tell God you're sorry. You have to go to people who you wronged during the year and you have to apologize. You have to ask their forgiveness because you're going to be held in judgment. Again, judgment is good. The fact that God judges you means that your judgments count. So Rosh Hashanah is our day in court. It's our day of judgment. God's going to judge us on the whole year, and everything that's going to happen the next year is being decided between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It says that God opens up the book of your life on Rosh Hashanah, and He judges you, and He closes it and seals it on Yom Kippur. So why are we all walking around on Rosh Hashanah going, oh, Shana Tova, good Yantif, oh, Happy New Year? Why are we all so happy if this is the day of judgment? So I have two theories. One is that most people are oblivious that to the idea that this is our day of judgment. It's just like, wow, how was your summer? Nice tan. Hey, beautiful, beautiful new outfit you're wearing. That's one of the reasons people are happy, because they just have no idea what's going on. But then there are people who know. There are people who really know, this is my day in court, this is my day of judgment, and yet they're all dressed up, and they're festive, and they're wishing each other Shana Tova and a good Yantif. Why are they so happy? Because hopefully, it's their day in court, and they did their homework. Hopefully they prepared, and they cleared up their mistakes, and they're very positive, and very optimistic, and very joyful that somebody cares, and that God's going to judge me, and He's going to judge me for the good. That's why they're so happy. Do your homework. Don't show up your day in court and you didn't prepare. Can you imagine it's your day in court and you walk in and your lawyer says to you, well, did you bring the affidavits? Did you bring the witnesses? And you're like, what? Witness affidavits? Oh, I was supposed to bring stuff? Oh, gosh, I never thought about it. I never wasn't thinking. He's like, well, you're never thinking. What do you? Can you imagine? He'd like be freaking out. So now it's like all rise, right? The judge comes in from the chambers and everybody rises and he's freaking out and you're freaking out and he comes up there, the judge comes up there onto the bench and you look up and it's your dad. It's your dad. How do you feel now? A minute ago you were scared out of your mind, but the judge is your dad. How do you feel? So on one hand, you're unbelievably relieved. It's my dad. He loves me. Nobody knows it's my dad. Okay, for some reason you have a different last name, like whatever, you can paint a different scenario. But it's my dad. He loves me. He's going to find every out, every loophole to get me out of this. And if there is a judgment, if he has to punish me, it's going to be totally for my good. He cares about me. It's my dad. Whew, I am so relieved. I am so happy. On the other hand, it's my dad. He's going to hear people say things about me that aren't so nice. He's going to hear testimony, and I'm going to feel ashamed in front of him. This is not just Judge Ito on the bench and I'm never going to see him again. This is my dad. I care what he thinks about me. When we go before God on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we say, Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King. God's our Father in heaven. He's our Father. He loves us. So on one hand, like, wow, He loves me. He's going to give me every out. He's going to give me every loophole. Whatever judgment is going to be for the good. On the other hand, He's my Father. Gave me life. He gave me the gift of speech. What did I do with it this year? Did I use it to praise people, to build self-esteem, to express love? Or did I use it to gossip and slander and say words I really shouldn't say? On one hand, He loves me. He's going to find every way to get me off. On the other hand, I feel ashamed. I have to go before Him. He knows everything that happened this year. Everything I said, everything I did, every person I was with, everything I ate. And I have to go before and I have to account. I feel a little bit of shame. Sometimes we feel guilty. Just as an aside, on Yom Kippur, we're sitting there and we're fasting. It's easy to be good on Yom Kippur. You're in synagogue all day long and you're fasting. So sometimes we feel guilty because we know, like, you know, I'm promising God this and I'm promising that, and in a few weeks I know I'm not going to really live up to this. Am I being a hypocrite? But you're not. Yom Kippur is Father's Day. What do you do on Father's Day for your dad? You buy him a mushy card and you take him out for brunch and you buy him like a tie and some cheap cologne and you're like, Dad, I love you. Today you're king. Okay? In my eyes, you're the best. You're the greatest, Dad. We really should do that every day. Why do we do it once a year? Like maybe, like really, you should be doing it every day. Every day you should be telling your dad, I love you, you're fantastic, and thank you for everything you've done for me. But we don't. Because really, most of the time, we're insane. Like a few weeks down the road after Father's Day, you're going to be annoyed with your father, you're going to get in a fight with your father, you're going to speak badly about your father. That's what's going to happen. That's the reality. But you're not being a hypocrite. On Yom Kippur, what's going on? You're saying to God, if I could live up to this every day, if I could be the person that I want to be every day, and if I could tell you how I feel about you every day, this is how I would feel. This is the type of person I would be. It's like Father's Day. This is how I really feel about you. The other times, I'm insane. I get caught up in my ego. I get caught up in work and life. I'm insane. But this is how I really feel about you. And if I could be at this level every day, this is how I would be. How are we judged? Again, we're judged individually. We're not compared to other people. If my name was Chavchi, and I was born in Meir Shearim, the most religious neighborhood in the world, in Israel, and I wore braids, God would judge me. But he judges me, judges Chavchi differently than he judges Lori Palatnik, who was born in Toronto, who grew up, and who ate back bacon on Sunday mornings. And, you know, that's, hey, everybody had a life, everybody had a past. But he judges people differently. She was born in Meir Shearim. She only spoke Yiddish her whole life. She never knew there even was treif food to eat, let alone eat it. I was born in a different time, a different world, different parents. Everybody's given their challenges in life. You're judged individually. It says at the end of days, you have different judgments in life. So every year you're judged on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And it says at the end of days, there's a judgment that takes place. That means the day that you die. It says you go before God in judgment. And it says that we're going to be great defense lawyers, right? We go before God and we're going to be dancing around like we're, you know, well, I'm sorry for this, and you're going to be blaming your parents for that, and you're going to say, I didn't have enough time, and I was too poor, I was too rich, I was too this, I was too distracted. And it says that God will say two words, and we will be silent before him. He will say, Ani Hashem. I am God. And we'll be silent, and we'll feel shame. This is the moment of judgment, and you're going to be having all these reasons how to get out of it, and God's going to say, I am God. Don't blame your parents. I gave you those parents. Don't blame your poverty. That was a challenge that you were supposed to deal with. You didn't use it in the right way, did you? You didn't use wealth either in the right way. I am God. It says the first step of judgment is what? There's different things that God will judge you upon. So just, it's a whole talk, another talk that we'll be dealing with, soul in the afterlife, but it says the first step of judgment is not on how much you know. You think that God's going to ask you, like, so what do you know? You know a lot of Torah? Like, so give it over to me, right? It says he doesn't judge you on how much you know. He judges you on Talmud Torah, on the learning of Torah, on the learning of wisdom. He doesn't judge you how much you know. It's how hard did you try to find out what was right. He doesn't judge you on the end result. He judges you on the process. How hard did you try? You know what you want for your kids. Like when your kids come to you and they have a test, or when you were growing up, what did your parents want for you? They wanted you to try your best, right? Just try your best. That's what God wants for you. He just wants you to try your best. And he judges you on that. How hard did you try? Talmud Torah, the learning, the process. That's what he judges you upon. That's J. That's judgment. Okay? You can't judge another person. Only God can judge. A is, it's not all or nothing. It's not all or nothing. We make the mistake. We look at our Jewish selves and we think, oh, well, if I can't do it all, I might as well do nothing. What's the point? We don't look at any other aspect of our life, all or nothing. We don't look at raising children as all or nothing. Well, I'll always be patient with my children. And the first time you lose your patience with your children, what do? You give them to your neighbor to raise? You call Jewish Family and Child Services to take them away? No, it's like, okay, I made a mistake. You get back on. Our marriage, it's not, we don't look at any other aspect in our life, all or nothing. And yet we make the mistake and we think Judaism is all or nothing. Well, if I can't do it all, I might as well do nothing. Otherwise, I'm being a hypocrite. Are you being a hypocrite? If you light candles and you go to a movie afterwards, are you being a hypocrite? If you fast on Yom Kippur And then afterwards you break your fast at a treif Chinese food restaurant? Are you being a hypocrite? Imagine you come to one of my classes. Let's say it's a class during the week on Jewish values for Jewish children. Right? And we're talking about the beautiful values, and that as a parent, you're really a teacher and a teacher of values to your children, an example. And we get to the point, I'm giving you over, sharing with you ideas from the Torah about raising children. And one of the things that it says that you're not supposed to punish your children at a point of anger. That when you're angry, that's not when you're supposed to punish your children. You're supposed to wait till you're not angry, and then you give them a certain punishment. It also says you're not supposed to embarrass a child. That if you're going to point out a mistake they're making or punish them, you shouldn't do it in front of other people. The kids are people too. And you shouldn't embarrass them. It says embarrassing is like killing a person. That's what embarrassing is. Okay, it was a very nice class. It was wonderful. That's great. Before you leave, I say, listen, do you want to come back on Friday night? Come with your family. Bring your spouse. Bring your children. And we're going to have a nice, why don't you join our family for a nice Friday night dinner, a Shabbat dinner. You're like, wow, that's so nice. That's so nice, right? You're scared out of your mind. You're going to the rabbi's house. Okay. So then you go home. You convince your spouse. We're going to go there Friday night. You come over. Now, some Friday nights at my house, first of all, I must say that sometimes I used to be nervous, like when people came over on Friday night. Like, oh, you know, I don't really know them, and they're coming over and entertaining and the whole thing. And then I realized they are so much more nervous than I am because they're going to the rabbi's house. So that made me feel much calmer. And my job was to put them at ease. So sometimes people come over Friday night, and it's unbelievable. My children are dressed. They are all clean. They are so obedient. They are playing nicely with each other. They greet you at the door. They say, you know, may I take your coat? They wish you a Shabbat Shalom. You come in. We all sit down. My husband comes home from synagogue. We sing Shalom Aleichem, and everybody's beaming. And my husband sings to me Eshet Chayil, the woman of valor. And then you smell the chicken soup and the warm challah in the background. And then my husband says, who would like a bracha? It's time to bless the children. And my children, like little angels, float to my husband from oldest to youngest. And my husband puts his hands on their heads and gives them a blessing, and they look up into his eyes and he gives them a kiss. And I look around the table and all my guests are like, they have tears in their eyes and like, where do I sign up for this? This is unbelievable. It's fantastic. That's some Friday nights. Some Friday nights are not like that. Some Friday nights, my kids were dressed up and clean, but now they are messy and they are fighting with one another and they're not greeting you at the door, and it's totally embarrassing for me, and everybody sits down and I'm trying to calm them down, and we're singing and they're fighting and they're complaining and they're going under the table, and my husband says, well, it's time for your bracha. Who wants their blessing? And they're like, how come she gets to go first? How come she gets the bracha first? Why can't I go? I don't want a bracha. And I'm just like, finally, I keep trying to, you know, talk to them aside and all the things, and finally there comes to a point in the meal where I just lose it and I yell at them in front of everybody, and I send them to the room, and I ground them for life. So everybody's uncomfortable at the table, and we finish the meal, and you say thank you very much, and I see you to the door, Shabbat Shalom, and you go and you leave, and you turn to your spouse and you say, boy, is she a hypocrite. Just this week she told me in a class on Jewish values for Jewish children, she told me, you're not supposed to embarrass your child, and you're not supposed to punish them at a point of anger, and all the things that she did tonight. Boy, is she a hypocrite. Was I a hypocrite? Now, what was I? I was a human being. A hypocrite is somebody who espouses ideas but doesn't believe in them and lives their life accordingly. A human being says, this is what I believe in. This is what I strive for. I'm doing my best. Sometimes I make mistakes. I'm not a hypocrite. When you light candles and then you go to a movie, it's not like God looks down and says, candles, movie. Oh, we're back to square one. Every mitzvah you do, every commandment you fulfill is for eternity. Even if you err the moment before and the moment after. You're not being a hypocrite by going to the movie. You're saying, listen, I'm marking Shabbat. I can't do it all right now. I'm not ready to do it all. Maybe I'll never do it all, but I'm trying. Maybe next year I'll be at the point where I'll light candles and I'll stay home. Maybe I won't, but I'm trying. I'm lighting the candles. That's what God wants. He wants your effort. He wants to know that you're trying. It's not all or nothing. K. K is for knowledge. It's better to know and not to do than not to know. It's better to have knowledge and not to put into practice than never to have had the knowledge. Sometimes we shy away from learning thinking like, well, I don't want to learn that because I'm not going to do it. So it's better not to learn it, because if I know it, then God's going to look upon me that I should do it. That's not the way it is. Imagine a scenario. Imagine it's Friday night, and my husband's walking home from synagogue, and we live in a neighborhood. It's not an observant area. And my neighbors, we get along beautifully with them. They're Jewish. Let's say they're two neighbors, and they're getting into their cars, and they say, Shabbat Shalom, Rabbi. And he says, Shabbat Shalom. And my husband says, where are you going? I said, well, we're going to the ball game. We're going to see the Jays play. He goes, really? That's great. He says, anybody want to stay and hear Kiddush first before they go? And one of the guys says, you know what, Rabbi? I like to go to the pregame warm-up. I like to see all the pregame stuff. I'm off. Shabbat Shalom. The other guy says, you know what? I'll meet you there. I'll go on my own. I want to stay and hear Kiddush. So he comes into our house, right? Everything's beautiful. It's Shabbat. And it's one of those good Friday nights, right? My kids are getting along and they're all clean. My husband makes Kiddush. He explains that about the concept of Shabbat. You stop creating to recognize there's a creator and God's blessing. And in the Kiddush, it says it's a sign, that Shabbat is a sign, and it's a sign of the Jewish people, and all the beautiful ideas, and you hear Kiddush, and the man hears Kiddush, and he goes, oh, Rabbi, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. Shabbat Shalom. Shakes his hand, gets into his car, and drives to the game. Who's better off? Obviously, the guy who stayed for Kiddush. They both broke Shabbat. They both did not stay home on Shabbat. But obviously the person who stayed and learned about Kiddush and heard Kiddush is much better off than the person who didn't. It's better to know and not to do than not to know. God wants you to have the knowledge. Never be afraid of learning. The last letter is P. P stands for what we're all created for. Do you ever wonder? Do you ever wake up in the middle of the night thinking, like, what am I doing here? Why did God create me? What the heck is going on here? So P stands for pleasure. Can you believe it? That's why we were created. God created us for pleasure, for the ultimate pleasure. How do we know that? So you know the Shema says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, right? God is one. The greatest contribution the Jewish people gave to the world is what? It's not Freud. It's monotheism. One God. So you probably wonder, like, so what's the big deal? One God, two gods, three gods. I read books. People ask this question. Isn't it nice? Oh, the Jewish people gave monotheism to the world, the concept of one God. But what's the big deal? One God. Anybody ever read Dershowitz's book, Chutzpah? It talks about Jewish people, stands up for the Jewish people. And he asked that question in the book. He asked the question, he says, you know, monotheism, footnote, go to the bottom of the page. And Dershowitz says, you know, I always wonder, what's the big deal? One God, two gods, three gods, dot, dot, dot. So what is the big deal? Let's say you imagine you have the God of the moon, God of the stars, God of the sun. I remember Greek mythology had different gods for different things. They stole each other's wives and the whole thing that was going on. Imagine you have different gods. What's the difference between that and one God? One God's just easier to remember his name. You know, one bumper sticker, right? Just, what's the big deal? Why? What's the greatest thing? Why is this the greatest thing? What's so great about it? If you have the God, the sun, and the God of the moon, and the God of the stars, it means that someone's lacking. You can appease one God and appease the other. Like, it means one God has certain attributes, and another God has another certain attributes. It means somebody's lacking. Together, okay, they've got a lot. One God means he's got it all. No lacking. Nothing missing. If he has everything, it means you can't give him anything. It means he has no needs. He can only give. The unique concept of monotheism of one God means he can only give. You can't give anything to him. He's got it all. It means it's all here for us. For our pleasure. He can only give. That's the unique concept of monotheism. If you ask people what the opposite of pain is, right? What's the opposite of pain? Most people will say the opposite of pain is pleasure. But is it? If I ask you, or ask most people, what's your greatest pleasure in life? I ask my parents, what's your greatest pleasure in life? What will they say? Their kids, right? And then you ask them, what's your greatest source of pain and worry and anguish? Their kids. But wait a minute, I thought pain and pleasure were opposite. How can it be that you could have one thing and it could be the same? You could have pleasure and you could have pain. Because the opposite of pain is not pleasure. The opposite of pain is comfort. No pain, the lack of pain. Our greatest, deepest pleasures in life come with pain and effort. Our marriages, raising our children, our community work, our self-growth, our degrees, our business accomplishments. These are not just happenings. This is not chocolate ice cream. Wow, what a pleasure. It comes and it goes. The deepest pleasures in life come with effort and pain. So everything here is for our good. Everything is for our pleasure. But then there's levels. There's chocolate ice cream. There's working for community. There's saving a life. And there's the ultimate connection, which is the greatest pleasure. Really, the greatest pleasure is having a connection to God. It's a class unto itself on the five levels of pleasure. We're not going to get into it. But just to review very quickly. Jack P. J. Can't judge a person. Can only judge actions. Only God can judge. A. It's not all or nothing. K. It's better to know and not to do than not to know. And P. Pleasure. That's why we're here. That's why we're created.
You have been listening to aishaudio.com. For information about our online services, visit our website. To contact one of our representatives, write to aishaudio@aish.com. Shalom from Jerusalem.